Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey everybody, que golazo! It's a loaded episode. Jimmy Conrad with Europa League betting. We have my interview with PSV and USMNT star Richie Ledesma. We have some quotes from Nicolas Giorchini as well as our own Jonathan Johnson. Talk to him. We have also Cesar Hernandez to discuss Liga MX Apertura Finals. I told you it was a busy episode and it all begins right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Que Golazo. It's a loaded show. So much to offer you, but we begin saying hello to my brother, Jimmy Conrad. Jimmy C, how are you, bud?
I'm good. Good to hear your voice, Luis, and to see your face as well.
Always the same to you, my friend. As mentioned, everybody, we have a lot to give you today. A Richie Ledesma interview. Also, we have some audio from Nicolas Giorchini, courtesy of Jonathan Johnson, our very own JJ, who chatted to him. But we begin with the Europa League, and JJ will talk to us a little bit later with Giorchini. But we have Jimmy Conrad. Jimmy, give us some easy money, some tips. It's a lot of games, but
right? I feel like the Europa League is a participation trophy. Just everybody gets to play in it. You know, there's so many teams and there's so much to dissect. I do want to start, though, with Arsenal. Even though they've won their group, and fun fact for you guys, they have more points in 5 Europa League games this season than they do in 11 Premier League games. They have 15 in Europa League and 13 in the Premier League. It's really a tale of two teams, you know. Obviously, their group, we could argue, is pretty manageable with Dundalk and Molde, amongst others. And they're playing Dundalk today, who are just happy to be in the Europa League group stages. So it's going to be tough, I think, to really gain anything from this Arsenal thing. But I do want to bring up Follerin Balogun. He is a tremendous young player for Arsenal. And what I love about him the most, and I'm speaking very, very, very American here, is that he was born in New York City, so he could play for our national team. I'm hyped on a lot of our younger players, but I love when they somehow were born in the States and now start to emerge as a powerful force in the near future. So I really want everybody to keep their eye on him. I think he's a good player and he's dynamic. He's got good movement and good understanding for being such a young player. So just keep your eye on him and hopefully he'll get some minutes, along with Emile Smith Rowe, another young player. I think there's going to be a lot of young players. They've already won this group. However, Nicola Pepe, who I don't know what website you guys go get your information, but who scored is a pretty reputable one. He's the highest rated player, Nicola Pepe, in the Europa League this season, according to that website. And he has been tremendous. He's going to be suspended domestically for his red card that he got. So he's still out. I think he'll get minutes here. I think he'll score. So if you want him to score anytime, I thought plus 125 was really good value for the highest rated player in the Europa League so far this season. But if you want him to score first, if you want to take it that one extra step, plus 450 for Nicola Pepe to score first. I don't know if he will or won't, but that's some pretty good value. But I think scoring anytime, he has a very good chance to make that happen. He's been tremendous in this competition. Arsenal, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen for them. Obviously, when we have the draw next week, it'll be interesting to see who they pull. They're just going to be thankful it's not Bayern Munich. You know what I'm talking about, Luis? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think they're going to be very thankful. Listen, like, I'm glad that you begin with Arsenal. I just feel like, regardless whether they've won the group and whatever, they just need a win. They need a confidence builder here. Even if it's the kids playing, Mikel Arteta needs a confidence builder. Like, he was grilled after obviously losing in the North London Derby. And regardless who's out there, they just got to get these 3 points just to make the club feel good again, don't you think?
Well, that's what they did last week. You know, they were coming off a tough results where I think they ended up losing to Leeds, you know, didn't play particularly well. Then they had Rapid Vienna midweek at the Emirates and they slapped them around. Lacazette's banging in goals from 30 yards out wearing the captain's armband. Everybody's like, all right, look at these guys. They're cruising. And then they played Spurs and reality set back in. So yes, they could play Dundalk. They're definitely going to get the win. They're going to get that confidence. They're going to get their younger players some valuable minutes. Is that enough to right the ship? I don't know. There's already, I don't know if you've seen the articles or I don't know, it's social media. Who knows what you're seeing? And some of the publications that are putting this out or circulating it aren't maybe the most esteemed, but they are saying that Arsene Wenger has been contacted by the Arsenal higher-ups to, I don't know, what, come back? Could you imagine Arsene Wenger coming back to be the hero?
That would be incredible.
The savior, like the savior. Arsene Wenger would come back and be the savior. I mean, that would be, that would just be 2020 in a nutshell, I think. So, yeah, Arsenal's got a lot more questions than I think answers at the moment. So this game, I don't think is going to answer too many of them other than to show us the potential of Arsenal moving forward. But yeah, I don't know. It's a tough time, I think, to be a supporter of that club.
You mentioned that American player. What was his name again?
It's Fullerin Balogun.
And he hasn't confirmed whether he wants to play for the year or like, does he want to play? Does he
had
any? I'm wondering because, hey, born in NYC, you know, that's my hometown, baby. Let's go. Let's do it. But
yeah, I don't think he's played for us. I don't think he's played for us in any.
In any capacity, he's never played. Well,
no, I'm going to look to see if he's played for. Yeah. Oh, no, he played. He had a. Looks like he has a short stint with our U18s.
Okay.
Then he went back and played for the England U20s.
Okay, so he's one of those back and forth. You never know what could happen.
We definitely got him into a camp, that's for sure. And he did score his first goal against Molde on match day 4 in this competition. I remember him scoring, but he hasn't been with us for a couple of years. Maybe, and I think we're seeing this too with Yunus Musa, who plays for Valencia, who tremendous young player too, who has options to play for England amongst others. Like there's something about our team though. We got a vibe about us, you know. We got Weston McKennie, as you can see behind me. I put on my side is my new favorite player because that goal he scored against Juventus. Woo! I don't think it's getting the love that it deserves. I mean, from the people that know, we're lavishing it with praise. But everybody should know about this. This is such an important goal. Cristiano Ronaldo scored 2 penalties. Our guy banged in a scissor kick, you know, against Barcelona in a big ass game. I mean, that matters. And the fact that we're
supposed
they were kind of like,
put it on the wall. That one, that goal.
Dude, like what's that should be every American should know how significant that type of goal is for such a big club. That was, there's less hype I'd say surrounding Weston McKennie because he's not wearing the number 10 shirt for Chelsea. He's not playing in the Premier League. He didn't come in very heralded. He came from Schalke, right? Who are not very good at the current moment. And he was pretty cheap. And they're like, oh, let's just take a flyer on him, see if he works out. The dude's working out and he can hold his own. And I love it. So I just wish that was getting some more love. And I'm just going to keep it going. I'm going to keep banging that drum because Weston McKennie is a player. And I think he's going to be a tremendous player for our national team moving forward as well.
Well, let's stay on that segue. So see how I did this, how I maneuvered for you to say that? Because right now we have Nicolas Jorginho, who's part of this group, part of this movement, who had one of the best, he did say actually one of the best moments of his career when he entered that camp last month. And he talked to our very own Jonathan Johnson on everything, including the United States men's national team. Check it out. Listen right here.
I even think the next World Cup can be a huge, we can surprise the world, honestly. After seeing the team this past camp for the first time, you know, the first time all these boys are together, and the way we still managed to come out with the results and play good ball was extremely impressive to me. I think even before 2026, but let's say I do agree with Richard Ledesma because 2026 is a year to win the World Cup for sure. The next one, you know, we're still new, but 2026 for sure in the US will be a great one.
That was Nicolas Jorginho. What a great guy. A lot to say. And we also have Richie Ledesma as well. I talked to him. He'll be part of this episode right after Jimmy. But let's keep going with Europa League, Jimmy. Anything else? Like we've talked to Arsenal. We know what Arsenal is all about right now. What else you got as we look ahead to this very busy Europa League match day 6?
There's so many great games. And obviously on match day 6, there's a lot of fun narratives about who's going to get to the knockout rounds and who's not. But I want to stick on Group C here. Bayer Leverkusen versus Slavia Prague, because they're both on top of the table. Leverkusen just needs a draw to be the number one seed, which is what I think. If you're in there and you have a chance to get the number one spot in your group in the Europa League, you want that so you can avoid any Champions League teams that are dropping out because they got third in their group. And that's very important to do so. What I love about Leverkusen, though, is that they are So much fun to watch. If you guys haven't watched, if you're looking for a new hipster team to follow, Bayer Leverkusen is it. I think Atalanta was last season. This season, it's Bayer Leverkusen. They have so many talented players. They can hurt you in so many different ways. And even though they lost Kai Havertz to Chelsea, they just got some players, dude. I mean, Demir Ba is kind of their number 10. He's running the point. You got Amiri, who I really like, who's really emerging as a threat. You got Leon Bailey up top. I mean, I'm going to be missing a whole bunch of guys. They got somebody, they got Florian Wirtz, one of the best young players in Germany. They got the Bender brothers, Sven and Lars. I mean, if you had a team with Sven and Lars on it, I'm pretty much sure you're winning at life.
It's like the Mighty Ducks soccer version, right?
It really is. They've only lost once all season. They've yet to lose in the Bundesliga. I don't know if they're going to compete for the league, but they're very tough to break down. Jonathan Tah is one of their the top defenders as well. It was to Slavia Prague, who they're playing in this one. But they were down a man for 60 minutes, and they only lost 1-0. For me, since that loss, Leverkusen have gone on an 8-game unbeaten run. Slavia Prague are also a very good team as well. If I was a team in the Europa League or falling out of the Champions League, I wouldn't want to face either one of these two. I think they know who they are. They've got their identity. I like both teams to score in this, and I like Leverkusen to win plus 180. That's the line that I'm going with. Maybe I should have just started there. And then Nadiem Amiri, I think, to score anytime, plus 275. He's in and around the box. He plays up high. He's got 3 assists in his last 2 games. I thought he was man of the match in his last 2 games as well. There's something about him right now. He hasn't hit the back of the net in a while, so I think you're getting some good value here. Plus 275 for anybody to score an attacking player in Leverkusen's setup is very, very good. So that would be kind of the two things that I would look out for. But if you just want to kind of bet overall, I think both teams to score or Leverkusen to win plus 180 is very good.
Yeah, I love Bayer Leverkusen.
Dude, so good.
1 point behind Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. They haven't lost a game yet. And they have a real system, too, in the way that they scout players and they figure out a strategy. They're a team to watch. I mean, we haven't talked enough about them, actually, on Kegel Lasso. 1 point behind Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga.
I know. They're quietly doing their business. I mean, honestly, the Bundesliga teams overall in the European competitions. We saw it with RB Leipzig taking out Manchester United as well. They were the only one that wasn't on top of their group. Everybody else, you know, all the other Bundesliga teams are leading their groups. So there's 6 Bundesliga teams that are all dominating. So fair play to them.
And the only reason RB Leipzig is not doing it is only by head to head. It's not a point thing. So pretty impressive. Yeah,
it is very impressive.
Any more from Europa League?
Of course. Let's go back to the Premier League. We got Tottenham taking on Royal Antwerp. Both of these teams are on top of the table in their group. Royal Antwerp actually has 12 points to Tottenham's 10. So Tottenham needs to win this at home to get that number one seed. And as I already mentioned, that number one seed is very important. Tottenham doesn't want to have, I don't know, maybe an Inter Milan or Real Madrid fall out and be the number two seed. And all of a sudden they've got this big giant matchup. Yeah, it's just like, that's crazy. So I think they're going to go out and do the business. You know, they're balancing a few things on their schedule. They have Crystal Palace on the weekend. Crystal Palace is coming off a big 4-1 win. I mean, Christian Benteke scored 2 goals for Crystal Palace. So you know they're feeling it. Benteke's hitting the back of the net.
I think it was 5-1, right? Was it?
Well, yeah, 4-5-1 against West Brom. So maybe take that with a grain of salt. Zaha scored 2. When those two guys are confident, Benteke and Zaha, Crystal Palace is definitely tough. That'll be a tough game. It's at Crystal Palace's stadium. And then Liverpool the following week, and then Leicester after that. So it's another – like this whole like 3-week stretch, 4-week stretch for Tottenham has been going to be pretty tough. I expect a lot of their even though they're down and they need to win this game, I still think they're not going to roll out their full team. I'd be surprised if he did have Harry Kane. Maybe they start Heung-min Son, maybe play 45 minutes. But I really like Carlos Vinicius to come in here. He's healthy again. The number 9, that's really been a terrific replacement when Harry Kane can't play or when they want to rest him. I like him to score. I like Tottenham to win 2-0, 2-1, or 3-1. Has to be one of those exact scores, plus 450. Vinicius, for me, is going to get in and around the box. He's very good at hold-up play, which allows him to actually combine with some of the players that are around him. Lucas Moura has been very good in this competition as well. Still waiting for Gareth Bale to really kind of be the Gareth Bale that we know and love. I don't know if he'll ever get there, but maybe that's past him now. Maybe just life has passed him in that regard. I think he's still there. He's got some qualities, but he's not like as purposeful, I think. I don't know. I feel like he's thinking about, you know, how many holes of golf he can hit me later. I don't know. I hope he proves me wrong, but well, I like that one.
There's a time to like sort of incorporate Gareth Bale, I would imagine, is the Christmas time, right? Like, you know, there's so many games coming at you. Yeah, at least even like 15 minutes, 20 minutes in a game. It would be pretty interesting to me if Mourinho doesn't use him anymore in this month.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think he'll end up playing or maybe even starting this one, but the Carlos Vinicius one felt the best for me. I think he will start. And then for him to score in Tottenham to get a result, 2-0, 2-1, 3. There's been a lot of goals in Tottenham's games. And it's very un-Mourinho-like in some ways. I expect them to go out there and do the business. Plus, Royal Antwerp beat them earlier, so they're going to want a little bit of revenge in this one and get that top spot in the group.
Yeah, and last week they were set for a win, and then they gave away a very late goal. You know, so I'm sure they might want to rectify that as they continue their pursuit in the Europa League and, of course, the Premier League. So many games, Jimmy. Is there anything else?
There's like one or two more that I want to talk to you about because I want to get your opinion. And I would love to, if the listeners want to hit us up, you know, on Twitter or whatever it may be. Napoli is playing Real Sociedad in Italy, okay? Ooh. So Group F is popping off. You got Napoli on top with 10 points. Real Sociedad has 8. AZ Alkmaar has 8. And Rijeka has 1. Now, Alkmaar has to go to play Rijeka. It's not going to be an easy game. They drew with Real Sociedad 2-2 last week. So they've got a little something to them. And I think Real Sociedad is going to be kicking themselves. They didn't get the full 3 points against the worst team in the group. But now here they go. They got to get a result in Napoli, or at least they have to match AZ Alkmaar's results against Rijeka for them to advance, which is crazy because Sociedad, for me, I thought were pretty in control. They're also competing for La Liga, right? They're just right behind Atletico Madrid at the top of the table. So what do you do if you're the manager? Because I think we can make a strong argument. Obviously, the prestige of staying in a European competition is important. But at the same time, you actually might have especially with Barcelona, Real Madrid dropping off this season a bit, you might have a legitimate chance to compete for La Liga title. Like, what do you do? I don't think Real Sociedad can be successful in both. So what do you do? And because you're going to have a drop off in one or the other. I almost feel like the coach, I mean, that would be great to move on in the Europa League, but I don't think he'd be that sad because then they could put all their eggs in the La Liga basket. I don't know. What would you do, Luis?
I think it's a very good point, and it all depends. I mean, the thing is, whenever this question arises, I always think about who's managing these sites. And I'm feeling that Gennaro Gattuso, you know, such a big game. And I feel that he understands that Napoli in many ways, especially because of the Maradona situation, you know, when he passed away. It's just like a lot of emotion and motivation is probably driven by the fact that Gattuso is probably going to want to, no matter what. What I'm trying to say is this. He's trying to make a statement. And I think that when you face a team like Real Sociedad, I think regardless of what's coming up or whatever, you just want to make sure that you take care of business. And this is at home, right? This is the first game since, at least in Europa League, since they announced that the stadium is now called Diego Maradona Stadium, right? So that's another perspective. I know that Victor Osimhen is coming back after a shoulder injury. You know, Dries Mertens as well is set to take probably a starting role here. And from the other side, I think David Silva and a few others are recuperating from injury. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle this. And also, by the way, Real Sociedad is doing pretty well in La Liga. So
they're doing great. So it's just, they don't have the depth to compete in both competitions. So I feel like they're going to have to make a choice. Regard to Napoli, they're one of my favorites. They won the Coppa Italia last season. I'm like, if they can get out of their group and get into the knockout rounds, you don't want to face Napoli. I think they have so much talent, and I think they have that experience, and I think Gattuso can get them up for the cup competitions. He proved it last season, surprisingly, in my opinion, winning the Coppa Italia. So I think they'll do the business, at the least get the draw. What I find interesting about this group in particular is that all the teams I mentioned, Napoli, Real Sociedad, and AZ Alkmaar, all have only given up 3 goals.
Yeah, I'm seeing that right now too. Yeah.
What's crazy. So I'm looking right now to see what the under is for you guys. I was trying to stay away from this one. If you guys have a nice vibe about it, I'll give you those lines in a second. But the under is -110. So you got to bet 110 to win 100. Okay. Or that's under 2.5 goals too. I don't see the over here. I'd be really surprised if it hit over 90 minutes. So if you like Napoli to win, it's -105. Real Sociedad straight up is +270 to win. And then if you want the draw, +260. I could see a 1-1 here too.
I'm going for that draw, I think.
I don't know if that's going to be enough for Sociedad. I expect AZ to beat Rijeka. And they would deserve it. I thought AZ has been fantastic against two high quality teams in Sociedad and Napoli to only give up 3 goals. You're through 5 matches and now you're playing the worst. It's unreal. So I wouldn't be sad to see AZ go through, but Real Sociedad will be kicking themselves for not getting more points earlier on in the match days.
Yeah, what I'm saying is Real Sociedad leading 1-0 the entire game and then Napoli scoring like the last 5 minutes.
You could see it. I could see it.
Well, you had one more, right?
Yeah, I did. It was, I wanted to talk about AC Milan in particular. Their
of
group,
course.
You know, is being dominated by Lille. Lille has been very good. Another team very similar to Bayer Leverkusen, only dropped one game all season. It was to Brest in the league. And I think their most impressive performance so far was their 3-0 win in Milan, where Milan hadn't lost all season and they got slapped around by, I mean, Lille just had their number that day. And yeah. Now you have, I'm just trying to find the table here.
Sparta Prague is coming. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got Lille on top of 11, Milan with 10, Sparta Prague with six, and Celtic, the one and only mighty Celtic, not so once and mighty at the moment. They've got 1 point. They're struggling at the bit. But Lille travels to Scotland to play Celtic. They should take care of them there. Celtic obviously have a plethora of problems. Milan, I think, are hosting Prague, if I'm not mistaken. No, they're headed to
visiting, actually.
Yeah. So it's going to be a tough one, I think. I like Sparta Prague a lot. I feel like they're going to be feeling pretty hard done by, that they're not maybe competing for the top two spots. But for me, again, getting that top spot is really important coming out of the group stages. Milan's going to be thinking that too.
It is a rotating squad, though.
It is.
Donnarumma's not there. Romagnoli is not there. Obviously, Ibrahimovic not there. But Rebic is. Colombo. Well,
you got Haga, who was fantastic in the last game against Celtic, you know, picking up the ball out wide, making stuff happen. I want to see more of him. I want to see more of Brahim Diaz. You know, Rebic has been very good up top as well. Yes, it's going to be probably a mixed team, but they have some players that I think Milan, almost similar to the U.S. men's national team. Like, all right, we got some young players we can get excited about, like, are going to be legit, and they continue to prove it. It's not like just this one game they do well. They're consistently doing well game after game after game. So I want to see more of these guys. Haga in particular, I think, has been good.
And, you know who's in this squad, Jimmy?
Who's that?
Paolo Maldini's son.
No way.
Daniel Maldini.
What position does he play?
I think he's a striker.
Wow. Imagine Maldini, him and his dad both being like lockdown defenders and then producing a striker. That's amazing.
I know, right? But I do believe that's who it is. Yeah, Daniel Maldini is part of this squad, I believe. And that would be incredible.
It would be. How old is he?
He is 19 years old, just turned 19.
Wow.
Yeah. Incredible.
So, one other thing. I've got Roma. They're going to be cruising. You know, they're going to do well.
Oh, maybe Christian. No, it's not Christian Maldini. I'm sorry to interrupt. Christian Maldini is a defender. So it has to be Daniel Maldini. Yeah. Go ahead, Jimmy. I'm sorry.
No. Last group I would say is Rangers, Group D, Rangers, Benfica, Lech Poznan, Standard Liège. Rangers are on top of 11. Benfica has 11. Lech Poznan, my former club, I went on loan there many, many moons ago. They have three. Standard Liège have three. So those two are out. But Rangers and Benfica, again, both been pretty impressive. They really like to give up goals to each other, but Rangers have been pretty stout defensively against everybody else. I like Rangers this season under Steven Gerrard. They're going to probably win the Scottish Premiership, and they're going to probably have a nice little run here in the Europa League. These are two teams, too, that I would not want to face in the knockout rounds. Rangers and Benfica both look great, and as long as they don't play each other, I think everything's going to be great, because they always just have like these 3-3 shoot-em-out, you know, games, goals on goals on goals, and defense doesn't even matter. So, that just keeping an eye on Group D and really looking forward to seeing who gets the top spot and then how that impacts the knockout rounds and the draw next week.
Yeah, I agree. I see Rangers going very far here. Very, very good game. Listen, Jimmy, I love it. Look how much info you gave us today.
I love
it. It's great.
No, it's fun. It's fun. I love it. And I think this is a great competition. So I'm excited to see how it all plays out.
That was Jimmy Conrad with Europa League betting tips. Jimmy will be back as well to recap, if you haven't heard it yet, of course, to recap Wednesday's Champions League action. And also we have an MLS Cup special weekend preview. And then next week, Champions League draw, Europa League draw, holiday content. Jimmy doesn't stop, baby.
Or neither do you. Myth and legend, everybody. Luis is running point. If you're ever going to send a thank you note to anybody for how great this pod is, it's because of Luis.
Nah. This is teamwork, baby. But me and you are like Miami Vice, just together. It can happen.
Awesome.
Jimmy C, thank you so much, brother.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Stay right here because my interview with Richie Ledesma begins right after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Joining us now on Que Golazo and CBS Sports Digital is Richie Ledesma, the 20-year-old international who plays for PSV Eindhoven. After beating Granada in the Europa League last week, Ledesma and PSV look to top their group against AC Omonia. Born in Arizona to Mexican parents, Ledesma's story is impressive, where he started his youth career with Real Salt Lake, then playing with the club's USL team, Real Monarchs. And in 2018, he signed with PSV. And after making a great impression for them and the U.S. under-20s at the World Cup, he finally caught the attention of Greg Berhalter and the senior side. It is kind of unbelievable and great to see the trajectory of Ledesma, who just turned 20, by the way. Richie, great to have you on the show. Welcome to Que Golazo, hermano. How are you, brother?
I'm good, man. Surviving with the whole corona, so that's a positive thing.
Absolutely, as we all are surviving. Richie, first off, congrats on everything that's been going on with your career. It's really been amazing. Talk to me about your experiences in Europe so far. You've been there now for a good 2 years now. How do you like it? How do you feel playing for one of the most important clubs in the Netherlands?
Nah, like it's an unreal experience. I never thought that I'd come so far in such little time. And, you know, it pays off, like hard work, and it motivates me to become better every day. And yeah, like I said, it's hard work from the beginning. So once I signed that contract with PSV, obviously I was coming off an injury. So it's not easy breaking into Ruud van Nistelrooy's U19s team and then Young and then first team out of nowhere. But yeah, like I said, I did it. So I'm here with the first team now, like training every day with them on the squad, on the roster. So it's crazy to see that my dream happening so quick.
It's unbelievable. And it's not out of nowhere, my friend. It's hard work. It's hard work. Yeah. Richie, this is the club of, I mean, you're young, man, but this is the club of Ruud Gullit, Ronald Koeman, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Arjen Robben, Georgina Wijnaldum, and two of my favorite players ever, Romario and Ronaldo. How does it feel when you hear you're part of this historic franchise?
Hey, you forgot about DeMarcus Beasley, huh? I'm going to tell him. No, but obviously...
I'm not American. I'm Peruvian. So I'm allowed to skip DeMarcus. No, absolutely. DeMarcus Beasley, of course. How does it feel?
Nah, it feels great. Like, yeah, those big talents are, they're youth. So that's like kind of me right now. I'm the youth. And yeah, like it motivates me, like it inspires me. And I just see every day Ronaldo, all these players that came from the youth. And I'm just like, wow, like this is really happening for me. And what if I become this world-class player, like when I'm in my prime, 24, 25, you know? So it does give me a lot of motivation. And yeah, it's nice to see it. I'm not the only young one coming from the academy side. There's Mo Ihatarian and Noni Marereweke, and they're all young. So it's nice to see us being a young team and like being like those guys that were big names. So.
Yeah, I hear a lot about the Dutch system, not just PSV, but Ajax as well. Of course, so many other clubs, just the way that they do things from the academy perspective and how they nurture players. I take it that you agree, right? It's just a tremendous just upswing when it comes to comparing to anywhere else in the world, just the way that they treat young players and how they mold them into professionals.
Right. It's unbelievable. Like, I would have not chose any other path to become where I'm at right now. Like, to me, this is a great development, and they've helped me so much through a lot of stuff, even like problems that I had at home or problems that, you know, personal problems, like eating wise and, you know, becoming fit and like stronger. And the football wise, I was there the whole time. So obviously I just needed to work on the outside things and to become this player I am today. So I thank them a lot. And yeah, PSV is a great club. Not only PSV, Ajax, I can go on. But I think it's a good development. So we'll see where it takes me.
How's your Dutch going?
I understand a lot of things, but I cannot speak it yet.
Pero en español, well, they speak Spanish over there too, maybe?
Claro,
maybe.
Aquí está mi Guti.
Ay, claro, tu Guti, qué bueno, wea. That's great. Listen, I remember your dad saying, because you talked about, you know, you're so happy you made this decision, Barcelona were scouting you. But in the end, you guys really chose PSV. You thought it was better for your development.
Right, correct.
Right. Was it just an easy call like that? Listen, I know that one of the biggest clubs in the world wants me, but when I think about my own, it's really... I like to hear that because it really makes me think that you and your family and your close ones, your agents, are really thinking very hard about the type of career that you want.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was obviously the wise choice. Like, I had no instinct. Like, I just knew PSV in my mind the whole time. So I chose PSV, and I think it's going to be good. So.
Absolutely. It already is good, my friend. Yeah. So listen, one last game in the group stage. You're already in the knockout stages in Europa. Is there any team in particular you'd like to face when you look at this tournament? Because it's a lot of teams.
Yeah. Real Madrid.
You want them to come down to Europa so you get to face them.
Yep. To me, one of my favorite players. So, yeah.
Who's that?
Luka Modric.
Oh, Luka Modric?
Yeah.
That's funny. We were just talking to Brendan Aronson, right? The other young US who's heading to RB Salzburg. He also said Luka Modric. And I can see that in your game, Luka, just the assist. Listen, let's talk about your senior debut last month against Panama. You set up two goals for Sebastian Soto, something you know very well to do, actually, the same thing that you did from the under-20s. How did it feel to come on and perform in that game?
No, it felt amazing. Like, me and Seb actually talked before the game, like what our game plan was gonna be, you know, to for him to shine and for me to shine also. So yeah, he just told me, like, bro, like once you get the ball, just look at me and I look at you and just cross it. Like, when you have a chance, just play me the ball. And I said, okay. So yeah, once I got the ball outside, I just crossed it. Like, the first one, okay, I put it right to his head. But the second one, he found it on his own. Like, I don't know. But it's an amazing feeling, man. Like I said, I only got 25 minutes. But 25 minutes, obviously, that's all we needed. So I think Seb got a little less time. So scoring two goals is not easy for coming on, you know, as a sub. So, yeah, it was a great feeling. I mean, me and Seb has been doing it since we were young with RSL, since the academy. So it's unreal. Like, my whole family was, yeah, it wasn't normal. Like, it was obviously a dream come true. And, yeah, like, my mom was emotional, my dad. So it was a good feeling. So I was happy.
Yeah, listen, I was going to ask you this a little later, but I'm going to say it right now. You know, something very close to my heart, Richie, is talking about Latinos and Hispanic kids representing the U.S. It's something that's very important to me, and I'm seeing that more and more. And I remember tweeting how excited I was when you set up Soto. You know, it was really important, I think. How important do you think that more Latinos and Hispanic kids represent the United States men's national team?
Honestly, think it's a dream for them. And I mean it because our parents didn't go through something easy. And, you know, seeing their own son and, you know, their own family, like, being successful, it's an amazing feeling. And anyone can do it. I'm not the only one that can do it. And Seb is not the only one that can do it. Alex Mendez, Ulianes, and all those players. But, I mean, we all come from playing Sunday League, man. Sunday League football in the Mexican League, whatever. And we're here now. And it's crazy to say that, yeah, I'm grateful for being a Latino American. So, and yeah, I thank my dad and my mom for pushing me. And my family means everything to me, family before anything, like everyone says. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, and listen, that's something that I've said for so long now. You need a few things to really make it. As a pro, you know, obviously take care of yourself, work hard, but also playing that Sunday league, you're going to learn tough tackles there and things that will never get cold in the professional game. That makes you a man, huh?
Right. I played Sunday league my first time with my dad at 16, men's, and he told me it's going to be hard, so you're going to take hits. And that's one of the things I learned. Like, I need to be more aggressive and not be scared of older men, you know? So, yeah, like, yeah, it's crazy to say that I actually did play Sunday League and yeah. Now I'm here.
See it. You can see it in your game. Absolutely. Listen, Ricky, let me ask you something. Is your dad okay with you playing for the U.S.? I know he wanted you to represent Mexico, but he obviously respects your call.
Nah, yeah, as long as I'm enjoying it and he's watching me enjoying it, because my dad obviously knows me and knows if I'm enjoying it or not, and he sees that every time I go on the field with the national team so far, he knows that I'm there to, you know, be there as a family and, you know, like, to have fun. And that's the most important, is to be there as a family. Like, if you feel welcome, then you're going to stay with them forever. So, yeah, my dad is obviously happy that I'm happy. So he's fine. He'll be fine.
I feel you, Richie, but I'm just thinking back when I was a kid, and if I chose, because I also grew up in England, if I chose England over Peru, I feel like my dad might disown me, right? What happens when Mexico plays the U.S.? He wants you to score a goal, get an assist, but Mexico to win, or what?
He does go for Mexico a lot, like, at the time, which is normal. I can't do anything about it, but yeah, my dad is crazy, so.
Hey. He's a Hispanic dad, trust me.
Yeah, Latino dad. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. Listen, Richie, there's a lot of excitement about American talent in Europe right now, right? A lot. You, of course, this past weekend, Weston McKennie scoring for Juventus, Pulisic for Chelsea, Reina for Dortmund. There's a great trajectory, a great growth in U.S. young talent in Europe. How do you feel about it as the team looks ahead to 2021?
I'm excited, man. Yeah. The camp that Greg Berhalter called in the European thing, whatever, it was incredible. I couldn't believe it, because just so many youth and so many talent, but we were so mature. Like, we were so, like, we all, like, we're family already. Like, the first day we met, all of us, like, hey, what's up? Like, how are you? And it's crazy, man, because I think our 2026 World Cup, I know it's a long time, but I think we could we could win it. And I mean that with all respect to all the other teams and all that, but we really have a bright future. And if we keep going, and I know there's more coming up the ranks, we're going to be something special. And everyone is doubting us now, and, you know, that's fine. But we're going to be a surprise to everyone. So I'm excited.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think this is a team to watch. Absolutely. Final question, Richie. PSV, you're in the Champions League final, right? A few years from now, maybe you're with the US in the World Cup final. Which one is it?
World Cup, come on. World Cup final.
We'll just tweet that through the US side, not PSV side. Richie Ledesma, PSV star, United States men's national team star. So happy to see somebody like you grow, develop, and just get better and better. The best of luck to you, hermano. All the best.
Gracias, hermano. Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody, to Qué Golazo. I hope you enjoyed that interview I just had with Richie Ledesma from PSV and United States men's national team. And now we have another legend, from one legend to another one. He is a freelance writer. You can see all his work from ESPN FC, The Athletic, 442, MLS, Vice. He's also a co-host in the Mexican Soccer Show. A tremendous brain and talent when it comes to Mexican soccer specifically. And he's here to talk to us about Liga MX Apertura Final. Cesar Hernandez, my brother, how are you?
Doing well. Excited to talk about the Liga MX Finals. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm so happy to have you. Let's kick right off, Cesar. This has been a pretty entertaining Liguilla with Liga MX and the Apertura. Why don't you just, before we talk specifically about the final itself, how these two teams got it there. Club León, we know that they were the favorites heading into the postseason against Pumas with a tremendous semifinal heading into this one. Set the scene for us, brother.
I mean, I feel like we got to talk about Pumas first there, because we all assume that they wouldn't be in the final. After the first leg in the semi against Cruz Azul, you saw that Cruz Azul had a 4-0 lead. I think heading into the second leg, I believe it was 5-3-8, they gave Cruz Azul a 99% chance of qualifying for the final. And I did the math, you know, basically the Pumas needed at the minimum 4 goals in the second leg of the semis to qualify for the final. So we all were prepping for a Cruz Azul versus likely León final, but that's not what happened. It was, I know there, it's not out of the ordinary to see some shocking things in Mexican soccer and just in soccer in general. We've seen some incredible things in MLS playoffs as well, but in the Champions League, it's just you're accustomed to that. But it was absolutely amazing to see Pumas get 4 goals against Cruz Azul. And it's amazing too, because the funny thing is, in the Mexican soccer world, the less of the talk is about Pumas and it's more about Cruz Azul just being cursed. You know, that, because, you know, you do at this point believe that Cruz Azul might actually be cursed because of all the late goals and equalizers that they've allowed in big matches. I mean, they're a big team, but they haven't won a title since 97. They've made it to 6 finals since then. I mean, we could have an episode just about Cruz Azul themselves. I guess start talking about, you know, it was a non-sanctioned event by the club. It was, so the club didn't do this, but, you know, I wrote about this in 2017, like a witch literally showed up to club headquarters with like animal heads and liquors and herbs and was just like, all right, I'm going to cleanse this place. We're going to figure this out. but back to Pumas, they got the 4 goals. It was incredible to see what they did in that second leg. I mean, Juan Pablo Vigón, I mean, he scored the 4th goal that got them the spot in the final. I mean, he literally had a bandage around his head, you know, so you could see it was almost like physical evidence of how hard Pumas had to work to get into the final. And with León, it's, you know, you kind of expect them, or you did expect them to have a little bit of an easier run in the playoffs, even though they were the number one seed. You know, they had a surprisingly difficult time against Puebla. You could say they also had a surprisingly difficult time against Chivas. They got a little close, but at the same time, they've been getting the job done. And honestly, Leon, I mean, when they really, really step up, they play some of the most exciting, high-pressing, attacking soccer in Liga MX. So that's what you have there at Pumas side, which, you know, which had an incredible comeback in the semifinals. And Leon, arguably the best team in Mexico, but they've things have been a bit closer than expected in their path to the final.
And anything obviously can happen when you talk about a final, especially, as those who don't know, a two-legged final, which really needs to be remembered. Because just to clarify here, Cesar, for all our listeners, in case they're not familiar with Liga MX, you know, Pumas obviously with that tremendous comeback, but, you know, the reason why they won that also is because they made the differentiator based on their head-to-head in the regular season, right? So there was no need for going to penalties or anything like that.
Correct. Yes, that's definitely a good thing to bring up, which works in the quarterfinals of the semis. But the final, there is no away goals rule. It's just if it's tied after the, you know, after the second leg, it goes to extra time and then PKs. But yes, in the quarterfinals and the semis, the way it works in Liga MX is that the first tiebreaker is away goals, and the second tiebreaker is higher seeding. So because Pumas had a higher seeding over Cruz Azul, that's why even though it was 4-4 and each, you know, and it's still incredible. I'm still laughing just saying 4-4, but even though it was 4-4 overall, obviously away goals were equal, therefore went to higher seeding, and that's why it went to Pumas.
So, you know, I love Liga MX because it's so like when you think you got all the rules, then you got to remember, oh yeah, there's also that situation, which actually I don't hate. I feel like the championship in England should probably incorporate that when they get into their playoff finals, you know, based on the standings and the seedings. Listen, let me ask you something. So now we have the Apertura final. It's a two-legged situation. The first one, Pumas will be the home team. It's tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern. The second leg will be on Sunday, 9:30 Eastern. That's León. You set the scene, basically. León, you know, obviously the favorites heading into the postseason. They struggled a little bit into the playoffs. Pumas, really pretty much nobody expected to get this far. How do you see this translating itself in the final? Will this continue to be a rough journey for León if they really want to win the whole thing?
I mean, I think what we're going to see is, and you typically see this in most Liga MX finals, is that the first leg, it tends to be a little bit more chess-like. You know, it's teams aren't exactly taking chances. You know, teams are kind of testing the waters, and I think we'll be seeing that in the first leg, especially with Pumas, who during the regular season, they collected more draws than any other team in Liga MX, you know, and I think a lot of that also has to do with their goalkeeper, Alfredo Talavera, who was recently injured, but he seems like, according to reports, he should be fully fit and ready for this week's championship games. But I mean, he's been tremendous in goal, and I'm sure he's going to make things pretty difficult for León. But León, I mean, at the same time, too, I think they'll really start to step up at home this weekend. I think, as we saw in the semifinal series against Chivas, they, even though a lot of us associate with that, you know, high pressing, attack minded soccer, at the same time, when they need to defend, they do extremely well. They're a very, very well rounded team. So I think that they're not going to take too many chances in this first leg. I think Pumas, you know, they'll also keep things fairly organized and pragmatic, I guess you can say, probably in a 4-4-2. So I think the first leg will be, I think a tense would probably be a good way of putting it. I expect the first leg to be tense. And I think if we're going to see any fireworks, it'll probably be in the second leg when León hosts the second leg at home. But who knows? It's Liga MX, you know. if you would have had me here, previewing the second legs, I'd be like, well, we know Cruz Azul are through, so, you know, we don't have to talk about Pumas. Let's move on to Chivas versus León. So here's the thing. You can't predict these things. So we could easily have some fireworks. And as I've always said about Liga MX, you just got to predict the unpredictable with this league. So I'm saying all this. I'm saying, like, you know, I can't tell you how much time I've been spending just like analyzing and looking at all these things, but no matter what I say, we can still have some surprising things happening. I anticipate we'll see some surprises.
Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing about Mexican football, I think, that it's just, yeah, you can analyze as much as you want, but it goes out the window. Let's talk about key players. Talk to me about some key players from León's side and then moving on into Pumas, because some of our listeners will be familiar with a few names that you mentioned right now.
Yeah, no, well, with León, I mean, you gotta talk about Luis Montes, just the heartbeat of that team, just an absolute engine, you know. And it's a player who I think a lot of us is describing as just, like, you know, aging like wine. You know, he's in his mid-30s now. I think a lot of people anticipated that, you know, this would be the twilight of his career. You know, maybe, you know, he'll move on to a different team, maybe he'll be a sub at a different squad, but no, he's at the very peak of his abilities right now. And he is an absolute engine with his distribution, his energy, his ability to take shots from distance. So obviously we also have Angel Mena, who is very, very dangerous as a right midfielder, you know, somewhat more of a, I guess you could say, kind of a winger. Definitely one of their goal scorers for León. You got to talk about Fernando Navarro, who's incredible with his flexibility as a defender, as a midfielder. You know, he'll typically start games as a right back, but then if León are really pressing, if they really needed to get a goal, you'll be seeing him, like, frequently in the 18-yard box, you know, which really makes things difficult for teams when you have this right back playing as essentially an attacking midfielder. But León, they don't have a lot of superstars, I'll say, but it's just a very, very cohesive unit. You know, you can mention someone like Pedro Aquino, too, who...
We have to talk about Pedro Aquino.
I know. I was like, oh, if I'm talking to Luis, I guess I gotta talk about Pedro Aquino, you know? No, but he is... But he's a rock in that midfield. I mean, he's just aggressive. He's great with his short passing, too. It's not out of the ordinary to see him be the leading distributor for León. So that's definitely someone to keep an eye on. Obviously, someone that Luis is going to keep an eye on right there. But for Pumas, yeah, I mean, it's their two figures up top. You know, Carlos Gonzalez, Juan Dineno. When they're at their best, I mean, it's you could say they're the best attacking duo in Liga MX. I'm not going to say that they've been at their best in recent weeks. I mean, obviously, we can talk about the 4-0 was an anomaly. Well, let's just throw that out the window. But they're incredible, you know, with that duo. And I think that, you know, if one of them, you know, decides to step up, even just, I don't know, just has opportunity to, that could really be the difference in this series, you know, just because they are quality strikers. And then you got to talk about Alfredo Talavera for Pumas, just because I do genuinely believe that if it wasn't for him, Pumas wouldn't potentially even be, I'm not going to say they wouldn't be in the playoffs, but, you know, they wouldn't be at the spot that they're at right now. Let's just say that. If I'm going to say that Luis Montes has been the best player in Liga MX this season, I would say number two easily is Talavera, you know, and that's another example of a player that we thought, you know, might not be at their peak anymore. They might be, you know, heading potentially even towards retirement, but he's been absolutely amazing. And I imagine, you know, now that he's back to full fitness, that he's going to have a big impact this week.
Yeah. And another player to mention, just because I want to, is
Joel
Campbell. Right?
Yeah, Joel Campbell, yeah.
A Costa Rican star, also former Arsenal player as well. How's his season been?
You know, the thing with Joel Campbell is that he's never been a guaranteed starter for León. But here's the thing. I'm glad you brought him up, because I would say he was arguably one of the best players in the semifinal series between León and Chivas. And I think he could potentially even say he was the best player, you know. And for Chivas, they had such a difficult time marking him especially with his dribbling, you know, like they had such a tough time trying to, you know, halt his efforts. So I think that if he does get the start, even if he, you know, steps off, you know, off the bench, that's going to be such a headache for Pumas to deal with. And with Pumas, I mean, I want to say that their back line is solid, they're doing well, they have a lot of, like, exciting young talent, but I mean, you just can't ignore that 4-0 loss in the semifinal series against Cruz Azul. So I think that Leon, I mean, maybe they're not going to do it in the first leg, but potentially the second leg. And maybe that's when you start Joel Campbell. I mean, I would start him in both legs, but maybe if you really want to have him, you know, have a huge impact, I mean, just press Pumas' back line. And I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to get 4 goals like Cruz Azul did in that weird, weird match. But, you know, that is something to keep an eye on as well, because Pumas' back line isn't perfect.
Yeah. And I think the key here is that Leon is hosting the second leg. And I feel like sometimes that, depending on what the result happens in the first, it can serve as a motivating tool. Cesar Hernandez, so good to see. Listen, before you go, I want very quickly your views on something. Much of the conversation, obviously, this season, definitely in Que Golazo, and obviously because of all my colleagues and my partners in crime, has been on just the hype that surrounds the United States men's national team. Christian Pulisic, of course, Gio Reyna, Weston McKennie with that Golazo he scored against Barcelona. But I always like to remind everybody that you still need to do the number one thing, and that's dethrone Tata Martino's Mexico, because they're still the biggest team in CONCACAF. And Tata Martino with Mexico has created a tremendous route so far. Not just that, but just obviously everything that he did with Atlanta United and before that, but now what he's doing with Mexico. And I always remind people, listen, Mexico is the team to beat. How do you see El Tri as they end 2020 and look ahead to 2021?
I mean, right now there's also, I'm not going to say that it's, that the potential is as exciting as the U.S. men's national team, because even Mexico fans are recognizing that, I mean, there's a big, big, you know, generation of talent, you know, coming through for the U.S. men's national team. I don't think anybody could deny that. But at the moment, you know, that's not to say that, you know, the Mexican national team doesn't have, you know, potential either. The Mexican national team also has an interesting group of up-and-coming young players. And I think that that's going to be, that'll be interesting in, you know, at the end of the year, what that does thinking, because 2021 is going to be a big year. You're going to have Olympic qualify, you're going to have World Cup qualify, you're going to have the Gold Cup. You know, you forget about the Nations League as well. You know, that you're going to have to find room to squeeze that in as well. So I think right now it's going to be a balancing act for Tata, because I think that, yes, you know, although the U.S. men's national team has an exciting crop of players, you know, there are a lot of young up and comers for Mexico that, you know, you do wonder if they're ready for senior national team minutes. You do wonder if they'll be ready even just for the Olympic side. So I think at the moment, I mean, if I'm looking at the landscape of Mexican soccer, and if I'm looking at what's happening in the U.S. men's national team, I think at the moment, Mexico is the better side right now. I mean, that there's no doubt about that. You know, I think if Mexico had their best 11 versus the U.S.'s best 11, I'm still confident that Mexico would get the win. A year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, who knows? You know, if you do have the McKennies, if you do have the Pulisics, if you do have, you know, the Dest, the Sarge, I mean, there's a lot of young exciting talent. If they follow through with what they're supposed to be doing and keep progressing at the level that they are, then they could potentially exceed what Mexico's doing. But yeah, like you said, don't overlook El Tri. You know, a big reason why a lot of those players aren't playing in Europe is because the sad reality is that those players tend to be a little, let's just say, overpriced in the Mexican market, because Liga MX teams have a lot of money. That means that they'll be willing to spend more than European teams for those players. So what that means is that you'll have a lot of exciting young talent in Mexico not make the leap abroad. You know, they stay in Liga MX, as opposed to signing for a Dortmund, as opposed to signing for, there's a long list of European names out there that we can list, but just like, as opposed to doing that, they sign for Monterrey, they sign for Tigres, a young exciting Mexican talent will sign for Chivas, you know, so that's just the reality of the Mexican, you know, soccer market at the moment, you know. And what happens is if you really want an exciting young Mexican talent to make the leap abroad, what ends up happening is that you either need a team to accept that they're not going to get as much money as they want, or you'll have European teams being willing to spend big money on these Mexican players. So I'm still pretty excited about what the Mexican national team has to offer. I'm not going to say that their generational talent is the same as what US is providing. But like I said, at the moment, I still think that there's no doubt in my mind that Mexican soccer, or I should say the Mexican national team, is still a little bit better than what the US has to provide.
Absolutely. I mean, Tecatito Corona, Raul Jimenez, Lozano is just too good to mention. Cesar Hernandez, so great to have you. Thank you so much. Remember, everybody, that you can follow him on Cesar H Football on Twitter. A lot of great content, including Liga MX Apertura Final, which begins on Thursday night. Cesar, hermano, thank you so much for joining us.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Hey, everybody, I want to thank Jimmy Conrad, Richie Ledesma, Nicholas Gioacchini, Jonathan Johnson, Cesar Hernandez for joining me today. Don't forget to follow us on Que Golazo Pod on Twitter. Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, and we will see you very soon. Have a great day.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life, while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.